Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean.
Well, it's Memorial Day weekend.
And on this Memorial Day weekend, we decided to take the weekend off. Not our radio show.
Yeah, so we've assembled some of the best calls on retirement that we've had. Some of the best, but there might be great.
But you'll like it.
Yeah, you'll like it. So our show will be sprinkled in with these.
Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us on this weekend. We talk about financial issues, both myself and my co-host here. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays helping people plan for their finances, the rest of their life. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And it's Memorial Day weekend, which
it is nice.
Yeah. Which we thank you for all those that have served before us, for sure.
Yes.
1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. We're with Brian. Brian, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call today, guys.
Yeah.
Hey, I've got a question. I'm going to be coming into my inheritance, and I need to do something to stabilize my retirement.
Okay.
So I figure you guys would be good to ask about that.
Okay. What's your question?
So I've got.
If you inherit enough money, you don't need to worry about your retirement. How's that?
No, I wish okay. I wish I didn't have to make this call. I wish I was inheriting that kind of money, but I'm not. I'm going to have like $60,000 to $80,000 to invest or do something to secure myself for my retirement.
Okay.
I'm still 20 years from retiring, but I figured now's better than never.
Are you married?
Nope, single.
When are you receiving these dollars?
Within a month.
Okay.
And do you have money in a 401k or an IRA or any money saved for retirement?
Yeah, I've got a 401k going through work.
And what's the approximate value?
$55,000.
How old are you, Brian?
I'm 50.
Do you own a home?
No, I do not.
Do you want to own a home?
I was thinking about owning a home, but I was thinking if I bought a home, I'd want to. I definitely don't think I want to buy a home in California, though.
So here's part of our belief.
All right.
One of the foundations, the best foundations for a solid retirement is having a home. Whether it's paid for or not, owning a home.
And why is that, Scott?
Because inflation.
It will keep up with the inflation. Rents will continue
to rise. If you have a mortgage payment of, I don't care what the number is, it's fixed. Doesn't matter how high inflation is. The bank's never going to say, oh, inflation was 6% last year. We're raising your mortgage payment by 6%. Doesn't work that way. It's fixed.
And even in an environment where inflation doesn't exist, like now.
But we're still seeing rent increases.
So
there's clearly inflation there.
Correct. So our druthers would be that you would purchase a home. And even, even if...
Or maybe depending on where you think you might want to retire, buying a rental there now.
That's not a bad idea. So do you know where you want to retire?
No, I do not, actually. I was thinking of maybe retiring in Mexico or something. Somewhere cheaper.
Well, don't buy a house in Mexico.
Yeah. So other than that, I would take the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I'd probably, I'm going to say the S&P 500, but...
Yes, here's the challenge. Here's the challenge you have, Brian. You get these dollars, you put them to work you invest them somewhere. They're new dollars to you. You're going to view those dollars differently than, say, your 401k that you've been saving up over the years. Our concern is, regardless of what you buy, there will be, unless it's sitting in the bank, there'll be some period where the value of that investment will fall, whether it's real estate or stocks or even bonds. I don't care what it is. It's going to have a decline in value unless it's just sitting in the bank at some point in the future. Our concern is that you go and invest it somewhere and you have this decline and you think, oh,
Yeah, so you put in $80,000 and you happen to put it in where there's market turmoil in the next 6, 8, 10 months. No one knows when it's going to come. We know it will happen. Yeah. And the portfolio drops to from $80,000, let's say, to $65,000. It's how you're going to react to that is the danger. Not the investment itself.
That's right.
If you bought the standard S&P 500.
All right.
So in saying that, I'd still buy a balanced portfolio. I wouldn't put it all in the S&P 500, but I would buy a balanced portfolio. Scott, you want to weigh in here?
Yeah. Well, one thing is trying to get as much of this into a Roth. So you can put $6,500 into a Roth IRA for this current calendar year. You could do that every year going forward, assuming you're not doing that now.
And assuming your income allows for it, approximately how much money do you make a year?
Right about $50,000.
Yeah. Yeah. You can funnel this stuff in the Roth would be, in a perfect world, you would get these dollars shifted over to a Roth over the next several years. If you told me you were never going to look at this, if you said, hey, this is going to be in a blind trust, I'm not going to look at it for 10 years, you would say put it in either the total stock market or the S&P 500, because over the long period of time, you got a high probability of a good outcome. But short period of time, it's anyone's guess. So it might be better to start a little more on the conservative side and
do a balanced portfolio.
Yeah, so I'd look at maybe
I'm going to say it.
What are you going to say?
Target date fund.
A target date fund wouldn't be bad for you.
What would be his target date? He's 50. How old are you? Said you were 50 years of age?
2030, 2035.
Yeah. Yeah. So what a target date fund does is it builds a portfolio based upon when you think you're going to need the money, and it becomes more conservative closer to that date. So if you went out and bought a target date fund of 2030, 2035, it actually does it for you. With this, so this is what scares me about this money to you is not only how you're going to manage it, it's who you're going to run into
that's
going to try to talk you into
a product. Because here's the real challenge. Let's cut to the chase here. There's not $60,000 to $80,000 is, I'll be real honest here, it's not really enough money to go hire a great financial advisor.
A great financial advisor, not going to spend.
They're going to say, Brian, I'm sure you're a nice guy, but unless we charged you a bunch of fees every year, you wrote us a big check every year, there's not enough assets for us to manage. This is just the industry. But
who will see you?
Someone who sells an insurance product, because they can get a 5 or 6 or 7% commission by locking your money up for years. So the concern here is that you go and talk to someone who sells you some product to generate a commission, and then you're stuck many years in a product that's not right for you.
You go, when you inherit this money and you go down to the bank and you put it in the bank account,
they're going to refer you to their...
They're going to push you over to someone in the corner who is nicely dressed and says, you should talk to our wealth manager or whatever title they give them. And they push you over the corner and they're like, oh, Brian, let me show you something that is going to change your life. Right. They're like, this is going to be the greatest thing ever, and it will probably end up being a big fat commissioned annuity with a long surrender charge. So if you were I would go to a
the target date fund.
Yeah.
Go one of the big one of the big discount mutual fund families.
Yeah, and buy a target date fund.
Yeah,
and
that's what I would do. If you're my brother, that's exactly what I'd be
saying. Well, actually, if it was your brother, you'd manage it for him. I was going to use that analogy because I've managed my brother's portfolios that's less than our account minimums.
But if you're my... He's 50, I'm 50, so if my brother, we'd be my twin brother. So we may not like each other this point in life.
So, Brian, stay away from anyone that wears a suit that costs more than $800.
A target date fund. That's exactly what I do. And
all right, cool.
To perfect,
one more question.
And to perfect upon this, I would put $6,500 in a Roth IRA in the target date fund and the rest outside. And then every year I would move a portion into that Roth IRA. Second question.
On this my inheritance, am I going to have to pay taxes on that?
Not at all.
No. Unless
it's an IRA.
Or an annuity.
Or an annuity or savings bonds.
Nope, it's just we sold all of my mom's
No taxes.
We took care of my mom's trust and all that. Yeah. So
sorry about losing your mom.
So the estate may have to file a final tax return. The estate may have to file a final tax return, but you personally will not pay taxes on it. All righty?
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much for your help today, guys.
All right. Good luck, Brian.
Scott, it's hard because given in the advice, if you could see Scott and myself, we're looking at each other. We know what he should do. But what he really should do is go find a great financial advisor to help him. But the reality is he doesn't have enough money to hire a great financial advisor. So he's going to end up with some commissioned salesperson cramming expensive product down his throat that will not be in his best interest. So target date fund, not the greatest thing in the world, but it's not going to mess him up. Like if he goes to...
So, you know, it's interesting. So there, I sometimes read how... I've read articles why target date funds are bad.
Compared to what?
Right. And I think there's a place for them.
Here.
Or, and if someone's got the 401k and they don't know how to... maybe they're not that competent on picking their options?
What's wrong with them? They're not... It is a solid... On a grading scale,
it is a
solid B. B plus.
Yeah. I'd give you that. Yeah.
So it's not a D or an F. It's not an A plus.
Okay.
It's not even a C or a D. I'm just showing off now.
But then again, I was a C student in high school. So
did you read that study? I just read portions.
I had a 2.2 GPA in high school. I don't know why I'm saying this. So if your kid has a 2.2 GPA, actually, I've told a lot of friends this. They'd be so frustrated because their kids.
They have these
sharp young kids, but they weren't doing that good in high school. They'd be so frustrated, and I'd say, "Well, here's my
valedictorians." The study was done like, where did the average valedictorian end up in their career?
Oh, interesting.
And
I can tell you, I wasn't the valedictorian.
Well, unless everyone else in your school was really, really bad.
We found a small private school for special. Anyway.
So most of them didn't go on to run, open their own businesses. They had a tendency not to be in the creative side, but they were successful in their careers, just not a stellar success like they were in high school because they had a tendency to follow rules and programs already in place. So there you go. So that 2.2 is really paying off for you. How could you get a 2.2 in high school? It was high school, for goodness sakes. You could get a 3.2.
I'm going to be real transparent here.
Okay.
Here's how I did things.
Okay. All right. So,
I'm trying to give hope to.
Listen, if you're a counselor and you want a new client,
I had a trigonometry class. I've always been good at math. I don't think I've ever liked someone else tell me how I'm supposed to live my life.
Okay.
I think that's part of it. I had a trigonometry class. And the first day of school, he gives out his grading. Here's how he's going to grade. And it's based on a test. If you get an A plus, you get 14 points. You get an A, it's 13 points, et cetera. I still remember the grid. And I remember looking at it. There's like 5 tests throughout the year. And I remember looking at it. I thought, wait a minute. If I get an A on the first test, I can get an F the rest of the semester, and I'm guaranteed a C in the class.
And you?
C's a degree. That was my viewpoint in high school.
Right.
I'm just...
So did you get an A on the first test?
Yes.
And then?
I never did anything since then.
You didn't? Not even take the test?
I didn't do homework. I would come in and I'd ask for the hall pass and I'd go get a cup of coffee and a cinnamon roll in the cafeteria. And I would talk to the... we called them narcs back then. There was a lady, I forget her name, but I would sit and talk to her in the
campus,
quad. The quad area. Yeah, because they knew kids like me.
Security.
I wasn't a bad kid. Wasn't getting in any trouble. I just wasn't motivated at school at that point. I don't know why that was me.
All right. Don't tell anyone else that story.
And I look at the funny thing is my daughter.
Are your kids like that?
My daughter didn't have, she was kind of similar in high school. She did, but in college, she did 27 units last semester.
I was telling my son that the other day.
A's.
I told my son that your daughter took 27 units.
She's not at
units.
Harvard. Okay. So she's at a smaller liberal arts school. And so she had 3 of those classes. She did through a junior college, through an online course.
And just crushes.
And she did some of the tougher classes there. And those are just pass-fail. So she says, Dad, I only need to get like a 72% there. And I get the credit. And it doesn't go against my GPA at the university.
Your daughter is most certainly got your gene there.
She's like, I'm telling, and we're getting the, like, Jasmine's like, come on, move along. No one wants to hear my life story.
All right,
story,
let's go to the call.
My daughter's life story. But you know what? Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it depends, I think, how you look at things. And if you want to be part of the program, 1-888-2-HANSON, that will get you on this Memorial Day weekend, 1-888-2-HANSON. Let's go to North Carolina and talk with Rick. Rick, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Oh, sure. My question is a little different than some I've heard on your program before. My wife and I, over the years, obviously saved in IRA accounts, but because I was fortunately making a little more money than the deductible IRAs limited you to, we made what were called non-deductible IRA contributions.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had to submit these 8606 forms to the IRS that, as I understand it, established a basis for each of those accounts. So now I'm in the world of academia. I'm not making as much money. And so we're not even contributing to those accounts anymore. But my question is, you know, at some point, should we roll over the non-deductible portion of those accounts? I think I know what the basis of them each are. Say to Roth IRAs, and if so, how do we do that?
Yes,
or do we just leave
brilliant.
Them where they are now?
No.
And you know, what do we do with these types of accounts?
So, Rick, this is a great question. So I hope you have a pen and paper available, because we will walk you through how to do
and
this.
And any other listeners, if you've contributed to an IRA in the past and haven't been able to receive the tax deduction for that year, this strategy works for you as well.
But it is not as simple as, hey, I'm just going to move this. You actually, the stars have to align a little bit.
So let's.
Yeah, and this money is kind of co-bingled.
That's correct.
With other money that went in as, I guess, deductible contributions.
Yep.
And then, of course, the accounts have earned money
correct.
Over the years as well.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And
so
now, by the way, I'm 63 years old.
Okay.
So things have.
Soon I'll be looking at dealing with them.
And Rick, you have a company 401k or 403b that you have available to you but are not participating in. Is that true?
Well, yeah. Separately, I have. Well, I'm in at a university where I work. So it's one of these, I think it's called 457 plans. Or it's not 401k.
403b.
It's not 403b, but
it's
something like that.
457 plan.
Yeah, exactly. But I've only been here a couple years, so there's about, let's say, $50,000 in that. So yes, I am okay. contributing to that.
And does your wife have the same situation?
Well, she's now retired and receiving a monthly pension.
Mm-hmm.
And but in her IRA, but she both
has some after tax dollars.
Yeah, she has a basis of about $86,000 in hers, and I have what they call a basis of about 88 or 89 in mine.
All righty.
And what's the value of your IRA?
Well, it depends which one, I guess.
All of them.
All of them combined. Everything combined.
Not the 457, just IRAs.
Anything that's in an IRA.
We'll start with you first.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I think it would be about $1.3 million.
Okay.
And then your wife's IRAs, all of them combined.
Oh, I'm sorry. I gave you the grand total. Hers combined are 205.
Okay.
And mine are about 1.1.
Got it. And she is not working. Is that correct?
She's currently not working. She's, she'll be 62 in December. I'll be 63 in December. I'm working full time. She's now retired.
Okay.
So here's your cost basis is roughly $90,000. You said somewhere right in there, right?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if roughly 8% of your IRAs have been taxed and 92% have not been taxed, right? $90,000 of the 1.1.
Right.
And
some of that, by the way, some of that's in a IRA rollover account, which was from prior 401ks.
Got it.
And then about half of it is in a regular IRA.
The way the government looks at it, the IRS, is that they view this, they add all your IRAs together, and they look at your IRAs and compare that to what you've had as far as non-deductible contributions, your basis that you've been filing on the 8606. So mm-hmm. roughly $90,000. They exclude anything you have in other corporate retirement plans, 401ks, 403bs, 457s.
So that's the distinction. That is the big distinction. So we're going to tell you how this works for you, but doesn't work for your wife.
Yes. Yeah, so if you today said, I am going to convert $90,000 to a Roth IRA, let's just assume you did that, and you think, oh, I'm going to try to convert the portion that I've already been taxed on, the IRS says, well, that's fine and dandy, but only 8% of that is going to be free from taxation. 92% is going to be taxable because your non-deductible portion of all of your IRAs is 8%.
So to convert over to a Roth IRA, the IRS views it as a pro rata basis. So you think, well, then, Pat, you said you could help us. Why you just said you couldn't?
Yeah, I'm wondering, should I even bother?
We'll tell you how to do it. Here's the rub, right?
If, let's assume for a moment that your total IRAs were $90,000, not $1.1 million. Mm-hmm. If we can take everything above $90,000 and transfer that to an employer-sponsored plan, like the 457 you have through your current employer, now suddenly Rick is a guy that has $1.1 million in his company plan, or roughly $1 million, and a $90,000 IRA that has all been taxed already.
And then you convert that $90,000 that's left into your RIA into a Roth IRA, and your tax liability is zero.
Okay, but I don't think I can transfer all that money.
You certainly can.
Into my employer.
You certainly can.
Tax law allows for it.
Account.
A few years ago, you couldn't. So laws have changed over the years. And the matter of fact, there might be something in the current. By the time this tax passage just gets through the sausage making, there could be something there. But
you can. And I have yet to see a plan that doesn't accept new dollars. Because it's funny.
From rollovers.
Because the people that install the plans at the companies, right, the plan administrators and
the asset managers all get paid on it.
Sure,
this works for you. And we've done it.
Here's what you could do. You could transfer everything above $90,000 into that. Let's say you right today and do the conversion and then
transfer it out next week.
You're over 59 and a half, so you're not locked until retirement date. You can pull it back out and put it back into your IRA and invest it how you want.
So that's why it works for you.
If it were me, I would do it, by the way. Huh. It would be worth the hassle.
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely. Because your wife isn't employed right now.
Right.
And she probably doesn't have a plan sponsor, it won't work for her.
Yeah, because for her, roughly 40% of her IRAs have been taxed. So you can do some conversion, and it still might, running the numbers, it may or may not make sense for you to convert some.
For your wife.
Yeah, for her.
But for you, it's absolutely, you should do this. There's no question. It's a great question. If you had been a client of ours, we would have already had this discussion.
I see.
Yeah, probably years ago.
Yeah. Because it's been, I guess, about 2 years. Mm-hmm. The last one was 2014's tax return where I had a basis I had to report.
You're supposed to report the basis every year.
Oh, even if you don't make a
contribution? That is correct. You carry that basis, the 8606, every year. Even though you're not making new contributions.
And it might be in there. Your accountant might be having it in there.
Oh, I'll have to check on that.
You're supposed to. But if you didn't.
I mean, I didn't make any IRA contributions at all in those 2 years.
Doesn't matter. You're supposed to carry the basis forward on the 8606.
Well, I assume the basis would carry forward regardless, just related to return was.
Rick, I'm going to agree with you, but you're supposed to.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going to agree with you. Okay. I think you're right.
I think you'll be fine, too. But
I don't think it's a big deal, but you're supposed to technically report that on your 8606. So do you understand the process?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, now suppose I just keep them where they are.
Do it, but
and then at some point, I guess I start, using that money. Then obviously you have to pay tax on money that you haven't paid tax on before.
Let me ask you this: how much money do you have outside of IRAs that you can drop on?
Outside of IRAs,
if you wanted $50,000 for something, you're gonna buy a new car, nice new car.
Well, right now I have about $75,000, and I call it kind of an emergency fund. So I guess
if it were me and I could take $90,000
and put it into a Roth IRA
that I don't have required minimum distributions
or
on,
taxation on, I would do it in a minute.
Yeah, I would
too.
Yeah. And who knows what's going to change in the future?
Yeah.
Rick, I have a quick question for you. Because we don't broadcast terrestrially regular radio in North Carolina, how did you come about finding Hanson McLean in our show?
Well, you know, for 11 years before I moved here for the position I have here now in North Carolina, I worked in San Diego, and I know you were on Kogo.
That's right. We were on there for a while.
San Diego for a bit. And I keep track here of some other programs I listen to on Kogo, and I found you all on the podcast. So every now and then, especially on Sunday afternoons, I'll listen to you guys.
Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck, Rick.
Take care. Okay. Thanks for the advice. Right, Take care. Bye now.
Well, we're taking a quick break. 1-888-2 Hanson to join us. We'll be right back with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, this Memorial Day weekend.
Yes. Before we go back to calls, I'm going to talk about public pension plans for a moment, because that's an exciting topic.
And you've seen this in the news, I assume.
Oh, yes. We've seen cities go bankrupt over these. They're underfunded.
Yes. What does that mean?
There's not enough money there to pay for the current retirees on the rolls.
Right. Why?
Well, a couple of reasons. One is, some of the return assumptions were overly optimistic, particularly in the late 90s, overly optimistic return assumptions. That's the primary reason. We're living a little longer.
And some of the benefits that were promised out there. So
kept getting richer. And it was still based upon the people believed that the plans were overfunded in the late 90s because the stock market was on fire.
And then increased the benefits in many of these plans.
Yes.
So what does it mean when a pension plan is underfunded? Here's what happens behind the curtain. Is if they promise you a benefit of $1,000 a month at your age 65 when you retire, $1,000 a month, and let's say you're 45 right now, the pension has to figure out how much money they need set aside in your name at an assumed rate of return to pay out the dollar amount, $1,000 a month, from the date you retire at age 65 until the day you die. And they use an actuarial table,
yes,
a mortality table, and an assumed rate of return and figure out, oh, look, Scott Hanson is going to retire at 65. He's 45. This is how much money we should set aside for him today. And this is how much we should be putting into this plan every year in order to fund that liability.
But
so
now
it is a liability. A pension plan is a liability.
So in 2007, the year before the financial crisis, the median funded level for state plans across the country was 92%. And for local plans across the country was 97%. This is from a study from Wilshire Funding Studies.
Which is a good number.
Yeah, pretty much there. But after the financial crisis, where we're sitting today, most recent data, 2016 was most recent data, we're at 68% for states and 72% for local.
Which means that
Jasmine, our producer's in the booth here, shaking her head when she heard the numbers, right? Young gal, Jasmine's.
Some 30% of pension plans are underfunded. So why if I'm listening to this radio show, why should I care, Scott?
Well, because the money has to come from somewhere.
And where's it going to come from?
It can come from one of three places. One, higher returns on their plan.
Which can't wish into being.
Correct, obviously not. Two, more money from current workers, where if we look at the stats, in 2001, there was 2.43, roughly 2.5 workers for public sector worker for each retiree. Today, it's 1.42, so roughly 1.5 people work.
Okay.
So it was 2.5 people working for every one person retired. Now there's 1.5. So even if you increase contribution rates, which is a lot of municipalities have.
It's not going to fix it.
It won't fix it. So the third.
Is what?
Is from taxpayers. Or.
Decrease services elsewhere. Decrease services elsewhere.
Which is what we've been seeing.
And which is what we've been seeing. Which is what we have been. What we have seen, not just where we live in California, but across the country. Yeah. You're riding down the road. You're riding down the road and there's a big pothole in there. You're thinking, why is there that big pothole there? Right?
Particularly the cities, counties, so much of their.
So why should you care? Because you're going to either get reduced services or you're going to ask for more taxes.
And if you are a public retiree,
then your pension
with a huge pension
could be at risk. Could be.
Look, the pension benefit. There's an agency called the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation that guarantees private plans like large company plans, but there's a maximum, just like there's a maximum on FDIC insurance for your CDs.
Yeah. So if you were a United airline and pilot and you retired, and when United went bankrupt, your pension was many of these pilots. Their 80 to 90% of their pension benefit was wiped out.
They were
out.
Making $100,000 in pension, $150,000 in pension. And it went to 30 overnight.
Yeah,
or 20.
My father gets his pension plan from his pension check from the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Who does?
My dad, my own father does.
Oh, really?
That's who his pension check small, but he gets it from the PBGC Pension Benefit Guarantee. There is no PBGC for public pension.
That's correct. It's all taxpayers on the hook. The municipalities are on the hook. And they theoretically have the tax and authority. So this will be an interesting thing to watch.
You should be concerned.
It's about planning, right? Here at Hanson McLean, we talk about what possible risks out there. How can we mitigate those risks? Look, you got a fat pension from a municipality. Hopefully it'll never be touched. Hopefully it'll go on forever. But
I was on a bike ride a couple of weeks ago with a gentleman that works for the state. And we were talking about this. And I said, good for you. We were talking about his pension. I said, good for you.
Absolutely.
You didn't.
No, they played by the rules.
They played by the rules. Totally. They didn't do anything wrong. I'm not saying that they didn't deserve it. I'm just saying that the dollars aren't going to be there to pay for it.
So have some contingency plans. Anyway, let's go back to the calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON. If you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're in Cincinnati with Robert. Robert, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Robert?
Good, thank you. I just want to say I really, really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Podcast listener. Yep.
Great. Appreciate it. Job, so.
What can we do for you?
So, well, just real quick. So, some background. My wife and I are both 57. I'm now the sole income provider for our family. I make $130,000 a year. We have $1.6 million in retirement accounts right now. It's a combination 401k IRA. When I turn 62, which hopefully I'll be able to retire at 62 and do something different, but I'll have a pension roughly of $2,800 a month. And then I'm planning on collecting Social Security when I turn 66. 67, and that'll be $39,000 a year. So,
for both you and your wife, $39,000 a year.
Yes. Okay. Correct. Yeah.
Robert, do you have kids?
I do, and thank God they're grown and they're gone.
And how long have they been totally self-supportive?
6 years.
And what was your family income 6-7 years ago? Just trying to get a base of how much income we're really treating.
So it's roughly, I'd say, 145 to 150.
All right. Okay. Continue on. Sorry.
Okay. So several years ago, I bought some property. It's actually a farm, and it's went up quite a bit in value. It's worth about $180,000 today. I paid roughly $82,000 for it.
Okay.
And it's generating, and the rent from the farm is generating roughly a 5% return. So,
5% off the $82,000 or 5% off the
$180,000? Yeah, sorry. Off the cost basis, off the $82,000.
Okay.
So, with all that in play, we have no debt. I don't make a car payment, none of that kind of stuff. Our cars are paid off, all that good stuff. Except it's a good segue into what my question is. I know you guys get this question.
Yeah, because so far I'm thinking, what's
you're
the
fine.
Yeah.
That's what I'm like, yeah, so what are you worried about?
Yeah, so here it goes. I'm gonna kind of drop a bomb on you. So bear with me here. So anyway, I travel a lot with my job, so I'm gone a lot. So we live in a kind of a higher end neighborhood. My wife's there by herself a lot, so I bought a kind of a higher end home.
Okay.
And anyway, I've moved a lot through my career. I've moved like 8 times, and every time I've moved, I just took out another 30-year mortgage and kept pumping money into my 401k. And so anyway, here's where I'm at. So here's my question. So with that all this in play, I just recently took out a $350,000 mortgage, a 30-year mortgage.
Okay.
And that interest rate's 3.6%. I'm like 1 year into the mortgage, and the house is worth around $550,000.
Okay.
So my question is, when I retire, am I going to have to probably end up having to move?
Well, no, what's your payment?
Can I afford this mortgage?
Yeah, what's your monthly payment?
It's everything, including taxes. HOAs are, of course, not that bit much. I think HOA is $100 a month, but everything, it's about $2,200 a month.
Okay, so let's just look at it from this. So essentially, your pension could take care of your mortgage payment, right? Just looking at a real high-level view. You plan on retiring in about 5 years, or at least sounds like you'd like to do something different. You've got a $1.6 million in retirement. Let's say that's worth $2 million by the 5 years.
Yep.
Continue to add, have some market growth, right? So let's say it's $2 million. Let's say you take out a 4% withdrawal at that point.
Which is about $6,500 a month. Yeah, yeah. That against your...
Or $80,000 a year,
$80,000 a year.
And plus then Social Security, what's going to be kicking in a few more years after that.
Yep. So I think you're fine.
I do too.
But here's what I would do. We're going to send you Scott's book, Decision Points. And it actually is this little...
Personal Decision Points.
Thank you.
George W. Bush was...
He wrote the...
decision
thank
points.
You. Personal Decision Points. And it walks you through the steps of determining exactly how much money you're really living on today and how much money you're going to live on in retirement. And what it starts with is what your income is today minus what you're putting into Social Security and your 401k contributions as well as IRAs. But from the look of it, I would say you're fine. Don't even accelerate the payments on the mortgage. You're going to die with that mortgage in place if you stay in the same
home. So our rule of thumb is get your home paid off for retirement, right?
If you can.
Yeah, right.
And depend on your assets.
Right.
But if you look at how much debt you have relative to your net worth,
you're fine.
It's pretty small.
Yeah. And then you just match your pension to that debt on the house. And it's like not having a pension at all because the money comes from the pension. It goes to the mortgage payment. So then you take a look at all the other assets, your 401k and the Social Security, and you determine whether you can live comfortably on that. First blush, you're fine.
Now, if you had of the retirement assets, you said there was $350,000 sitting in a money market account.
Well, we'd say, yeah.
I would say you need to make some adjustments or look at just paying the mortgage off, but it's probably not cash. And I think you're fine.
You're fine.
And now, if you don't like your house, because it sounds like your wife like one of the neighbors.
Yeah, that's
use this as an excuse.
Yeah, because you said and quite frankly, you may not want to live in that house when you retire. No idea. Right. But
and I have a feeling
you only have $200,000 in equity in the house.
I have a feeling you've been working on your retirement for a number of years, saving diligently,
I
right?
Have.
And since, you're concerned about it
since the day you started working.
Yeah,
that's a plus and a minus. The positive to that,
by 20s, yeah.
Yeah, the positive to that is you are at a point where you've got financial independence right now. That's the positive. The negative to it is that you're concerned about it, which you'll probably always be concerned about it.
Yeah, you show me someone that doesn't worry about money, I'll show you someone that doesn't have any. You're going to worry about it.
Well, worry's a strong word. Yeah.
So you're fine. But we're going to send you the book, read it, and go through the exercise.
We'll stick on hold and team will get your information.
All right, appreciate it.
Appreciate it calling. And continuing on, let's be in San Jose. In San Jose, we're going to talk with Mary. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. So my question is, I'm pushing 60. I'm 59 years old. I am out of a job now, but I'm hoping to get another job soon. I own a property that I'm renting. It worth near, let's say, $1.9 million.
Okay.
And I owe on it like $370,000.
Okay.
My rent pays for its payment, tax, and everything, and it gives me, like, I guess near $2,000 in cash, a little less than $2,000.
So what is the, Mary, what's the gross amount that you receive in rent?
Per month.
About $4,500.
Okay.
$4,500 per month, yeah. So, and I have a condo that I bought 3 years ago. It has appreciated about, I want to say $150,000 on it. I owe on that condo $270,000.
And what's the value of the condo?
I want to say $550,000.
Okay. Keep going.
So my question is, shall I cash out some of my 401k and pay off my both properties? Or shall I sell my condo, take the cash, and pay toward my house and move back to my house?
What is your plan? You know, so here's an interesting thing, Mary. You are in probably the most expensive real estate market in the country, right? San Jose's gone nuts.
Yeah.
You paid, when did you, your condo's worth $550 a day. What did you pay for it 3 years ago?
370-ish.
All right, 370 and it's worth $550.
Wow.
In 3 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to see the same appreciation of this magnitude going forward. It's impossible, mathematically impossible. So you've had a tremendous run up, right? And the $1.9 million home, how big a home is that?
Well, it's a four-bedroom, two-bath. Less than 2,000 square feet.
Less than 2,000 square feet. Probably a 40-year-old, 50-year-old ranch house or something?
Yeah.
For $1.9 million.
And tell us how much you have in your 401k. What's the...
I have less than a million. I have about... 700.
Okay, 50. And so you said you're leaving one job and wanting to start another one. Elaborate on that.
I'm hoping I'm applying.
Do you want to do that? Do you want to continue to work?
I got laid off. That's what I'm asking you. I like to. Yes, I want.
You'd like to keep working.
Okay. Yeah, so because if we just do some quick numbers, you're worth about $2.5 million just adding up these three assets. Is that right?
Less the debt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one challenge, so I think your original question was, should I take the money in my 401k and pay off the mortgages? While that can be tempting to do, the challenge with that is if you cash in your 401k, it'll be like you earned $700,000 in one calendar year.
So we know the answer to that is probably not.
No, because your tax rates would be ridiculous.
But the bigger question is, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to achieve? Do you want to stay in the San Jose area? Do you want to?
Because I know there's a lot of Mary. We talked to a lot of people in your position. They're like, "Holy smokes! I've made so much money in real estate. Why don't I go move somewhere a little different? I don't have to move that far even to get a much better valuation in real estate, and then I'm financially set."
I don't want to pay a lot of taxes, and I don't want to move away from here.
Okay, well, the first answer is you don't want to move away from there. So the second answer to the question is, do you liquidate the 401k to pay these off? The answer is no, you don't want to do that. Do you move from?
You could just take, you're 59, almost 60, so if you're 59 and a half, you can take money out of your 401k as needed right now to bridge it over until you get another job.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that.
Do I have to pay taxes on it?
Yeah,
you'd have to pay taxes.
But much less than...
And the rules with 401k is different from an IRA, which is from a 401k, if you're 55 or older in the year in which you separate from service from a job, there's no penalty taking the money out of a 401k.
Even if you're not 59 and a half.
If you're 59 and a half...
and the money's in an IRA, you can take money without a penalty. And you said you're 59 pushing 60. It doesn't matter as long as you're over age 55 when you separate from service. Yeah. So I would not look to drain the 401k to pay those mortgages
off. Actually, I would agree with Pat. What I would consider doing, if I were in your situation, I would consider doing an exchange on your rental home. Was that was your primary residence?
Not anymore. Okay. It's been rented for past 3-4 years.
Okay. I would, if it were me, because you're getting, if you look at the gross yield, $4,500 a month on a, let's call it $2 million, that's a 2.25% yield for real estate yield. That is really low.
Yeah, it's extremely low.
So in other words, you're not getting very much rent relative to how much, what the value of that property is. I would, if it were me, I'd look at exchanging that into some other markets, maybe have 4 rentals and have a property manager. You could have much more cash flow out of that.
Or Scott, selling it outright, paying the taxes on it and living on it, paying the...
She just said she didn't want to pay the taxes.
I know no one wants to pay the taxes. Have you met anyone ever that wanted to pay the taxes?
Yeah, but I've certainly had enough people who called right before the financial crisis and didn't want to pay taxes on their real estate.
Yeah.
Only wish they had later.
Well, in terms of paying taxes, I have a lot of capital losses back in the days.
Mary, you know what you'd be best served with? You really should sit down with a good certified financial planner who can help you kind of map out what are Mary's options right now, right? Because you've got a number of them in front of you. So, and I think you called, should I take the 401k, cash it in, and pay off the house?
That's just
not going to work because of the way the tax laws work. But I think you should look at a number of different options. And then you could go back and then you could say, which one's going to work best for me? That's what we'd highly recommend.
Okay.
But do not cash out that 401k to pay off those loans. That is a certainty.
Well, I wasn't going to cash it all at once. I was going to take like $20,000-$30,000 a year and just pay off lower the bill, and then until I'm.
Well, it might make sense. It all depends on what your work's going to be like. So if you're planning on going back, like I said, I really think you'd benefit sitting down with a financial advisor.
I agree with Scott.
We've got couple great advisors in the Bay Area if you want to chat with one of us or talk with someone else you know. But hey, Mary, we appreciate the call. We wish you most of success. You know what's interesting, Pat? If home values have gone in parts of the Bay Area, San Francisco, San Jose,
crazy. I feel like I've seen this movie before. Do you ever feel that way?
I was talking to a buddy the other day. I said he's actually in the construction trades for building apartments in the Bay Area, right? Throughout the Bay Area. And I said, it'll be interesting what happens when technology goes through another recession. Because it has.
And it will.
Nobody knows when, right?
But it will again.
Everything goes through their cycles.
Yes.
And what impact that could have on real estate prices.
Scott, especially if you see what some of these technology stocks are trading at versus their revenue, not even their earnings.
Well, when you've got roughly a $2 million house that rents for $4,500 a month, there's a little imbalance. Anyway, appreciate the call. If you want to be a part of the program, you've got a call for us. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're continuing in the Bay Area with William. William, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, thank you.
What can we do for you?
Do I just start up? Or?
Yeah,
go ahead.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a retired military, and I also work full-time right now. My wife works full-time. She'll be retiring at 67. She's 64 right now. We've got to get her into that. And I'm hoping to retire at 62. And the thing is, we just sold our house in California, paid off our retirement home we've been working on for 10 years because we don't have a 401k or anything like that. We got 2 IRAs, but they're pretty small. But between Social Security and my military and her Social Security, we're hoping to have like $4,000 a month.
Okay. And where are you moving to?
In Nevada.
Where?
Up near the Reno area.
And you have a home paid off there?
Yes, sir.
And what's your question for us?
I was wondering if there's anything I'm missing. I mean, we've got two IRAs. Their total between the two of us is like $35,000. I was just going to pull like $300 a month on each one of those.
And do you have a military pension now?
Yes, sir.
And is your wife 100% beneficiary of the military pension?
When I pass, she gets like 60%.
Okay. Where do you work now?
I'm on base at Travis down here.
But you're civilian?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Contract.
So,
got it.
The only thing different...
And are you renting today in California?
Yeah, we're going to rent here for another 2 years until I can retire. And by that time, she'll be able to retire on Social Security, too, if she wants to. She said she can work. She can't stop working. She's one of those kind that just won't quit.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
Yes, sir.
The only thing I would caution you about is I wouldn't count on any sort of a distribution from those IRAs.
Right.
I
was just going to use them as a supplemental just in case we needed it later.
I'd leave that as a safety net.
I think another safety net, supplemental, look at later. I would think you'd be too young at this point, but at some point you could use a reverse mortgage
on that the home up in Nevada. But I wouldn't.
I'd wait till you're in your 70s.
I would not start a distribution from that IRA at all. I would do my very best not to touch that. You don't have a much of a safety net at all. And while your income is consistent and you don't have any market risk, there are things that happen in life. And that's why, you know, that last $35,000, I would not take a distribution. And even if I were to take a distribution, you said $300 a month, which actually turns out to be about a 10.5% distribution, which is way too high. Way, three times higher than it should be. So don't take that.
And if your wife wants to keep working, then that's the supplemental income.
That's your supplemental income. And you want to keep your wife working as long as you possibly can. I just think that makes a lot of sense.
For a lot of reasons.
For years.
But yeah, there's no better income than spousal income, so that's what we like to say. So, yeah. I think you'll be fine.
I plan on working around the house because we got a pretty good piece of property up there.
Where in Nevada? You said outside Reno. Where?
Silver Springs.
Oh, beautiful.
It's actually not too far from the Gigafactory for Tesla.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful area.
Try to get a job there.
Beautiful area. So yeah, there's lots of hiring in Nevada. So appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you, William. Appreciate it.
Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. If you want to get this through a podcast, just go to HanselMcLean.com. You can get this through podcast. And we hope to have you here next week. This has been Hansel McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.